Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, just whenever I finish the book, I stick it up here in the podcast feed. And I'm bringing you this review today from St. Petersburg in Russia. That's right, I'm on the road again on Wednesday. My agent called up and said, hey, we might have a gig up in the Baltic, but it's not confirmed yet. And I was like, yeah, maybe. And then on Thursday he said, yep, it's going ahead. So then on Thursday night I flew out, got into Tallinn, Estonia yesterday, and arrived on the cruise ship that I'm working on today. And I thought, well, I'll just go and get off the ship. And of course I tried to get off the ship and into Russia. Turns out I either need a visa or more paperwork than I had on me at the time. So I'm actually just like literally in the dock, in the port at the cruise terminal, well, passenger terminal here in St. Petersburg, and I can't get off the ship. Or I can get off the ship and stand on the dock, but I can't get through the little cubby hole building there without being turned away. But tomorrow I should have all my information in order and be able to get into Russia. So I thought, well, instead of going and seeing St. Petersburg, which was my plan to do that's what I was going to do today. I thought, well, I'll finish off the book that I'm reading and review it. And that book is Little Brother by Cory Doctorow. And I'll talk about that in a minute. First of all, just a little bit of news. First of all, some feedback. I'm not going to read any because I'm not connected to the internet here. But there's lots of good feedback about the past two episodes. Is it the past two episodes? Anyway, the one with the Charles Stross book, Halting State, that I did in second person review. I did a whole review in the second person, and I've got quite a bit of good feedback from that. Also about the live show that I did last time out with no preparation. Some people emailed me to say that if that's what I can do with no preparation. I must admit, I did write a few notes at the end of that before doing it. But the good thing is that this book was by Tobias Espakel, the book Crystal Rain. And I said on Twitter, hey, live show in a few hours or whatever I said, and it's going to be this book by Tobias Espakel. And it's obviously that Tobias Espakel searches for his own name on Twitter or has some kind of Google alert or Twitter alert. Not really sure how that works, but there he goes. And so what happened is actually Tobias Espakel popped in for a while and watched a bit of the live video streaming as I recorded a review of his book. And I don't know how long he stuck about, but he seemed to like the idea of doing a video stream. He didn't actually mention anything about my review itself, because to be honest, not the most flattering review out there. Again, if I'd have known that the author of the book was going to be watching me do the review, I probably wouldn't have gone through and picked out grammar errors and spelling errors and punctuation errors or whatever I was picking out later on in the book. But that is quite good fun. So that's good. Successful last episode. Also, yes, one final thing is that I want to mention is goodreads.com. Again, I've put up all the different books that are listed. I've now actually managed to get every single book that has been recommended to me while I've been doing this podcast, which comes in, I think it's about maybe 100 or 120 books that have been recommended to me. Of course, there's more than that, like series or multiple books by the same author. But go to goodreads.com/Luke Burridge and you'll be able to find all of my different categories of books that I have at home. The books that I'm reading now, the books that I want to read soon, the books that I want to read that have been suggested, and books that I've read and things like that. Also, I created a group for SFBRP listeners, so you can join up there, and there's a little bit of debate going on. There's like three topics of conversation and lots of people discussing bits and pieces there. The main topic that people are going on is, what do you do with books that you've read? And it just so happens that like three or four listeners live in Germany, so we're all swapping our living in Germany English books, what to do with them once you finish with them kind of stuff. And that final bit of news, which is unrelated to the book, well, a little bit related to the book that I'm reviewing today, is that Stanza. I mentioned this before, when I read a book on my iPod, I use the program Stanza Book Reader. And before I was moaning that I didn't know how far through a book I was, and there was a Stanza update, they've updated the software, and now everything is not just says it's chapter this, or you're on page this of this chapter. It also gives you a percentage of how far you are through the book. So if you're like about halfway through the book, it says you're at 47.23% of the way through the book. And I found that really quite interesting. And also, I said before that I really want a progress bar because I don't know how far through the book I am as I'm reading these books. And they've put a progress bar. It's like the bottom line of pixels across the screen is like this little grey bar that turns to black as you read, so you know where you are through the book. And that's actually making reading a book a lot more enjoyable for some reason, just because you sort of realise the pacing of it, and when you're ramping up to the end, it's all good. And also, there's this new bookmarking, very easy bookmarking functionality that they've added, which I'm going to use a little bit, because I discovered it as I was reading this book. So the book that I'm going to be reviewing now is called Little Brother by Cory Doctorow, and it was released last year, 2008, and it's around about, well, I read it on the ebook reader, but I think it's around about 350 or 380 pages long. I'm trying to remember what I entered or what it said when I entered, how far through the book I was when I last went onto goodreads.com. I have the book actually as a paper book, as a like a real book at home, because I bought it. No, I didn't buy it. I picked it up secondhand on this sort of book, like paperback book shopping shelf that I saw before. I think I mentioned this at the end of the last review, and I thought, well, I'll put it on my iPod as well. So I'll read half of the book from the paper book, and I'll read half of the book or the novel from the iPod reader to see which one I liked best. And so that was the idea. Of course, it didn't go ahead because I did get this last minute gig this week. So I thought, well, tell you what, I'll just not bother with the paper book. And the First and Last Men book by Olaf Stapleton that I started reading at home, only got a few pages into that as well. So I thought, well, I'll just give that a pause and I'll just read the book here on my iPod. So there you go, a little bit of an introduction on the reason why I'm reading this. Or not the reason why I'm reading this, because a while ago I said to people, hey, I'm going to start reading books on my iPod. Tell me some free books that you can find online. And someone said, hey, what about Cory Doctorow? And so I emailed that person back. I can't remember the name now. And I said, well, Cory Doctorow, always an interesting writer, but I've never heard that much interesting stuff about his fiction. Well, it's not so much about his fiction. I've heard people talk about his fiction, but mainly like the delivery and the licensing of it. So he puts it out for free online. You can download it and read it for free. And yet he sells the books themselves and they become bestsellers. Or, you know, he sells an adequate amount of them to become a professional fiction writer as well. And I always thought that was really interesting. And I'm probably going to do the same kind of thing with my novels, is actually just publish them online so people can download them for free. And then on top of that, like, I really enjoyed Cory Doctorow's writing on his website, Boing Boing, or whatever website. I think he's the editor, main writer there, or one of the main writers there. And I really enjoyed it, and I was subscribed for a while, but I unsubscribed because, to be honest, there's just too much stuff on there. I mean, it's all good stuff, but there's only so many hours in my day, and I can't keep up with some of these blogs. But they are the most popular blogs. So, of course, he's a good writer, and I still read it sometimes if there's an interesting article there, or sometimes I just go there, and if I don't have anything to read, I'll just check it out. But again, it's always about his issues that he talks about rather than the actual novels. And I heard this interview with Cory Doctorow a while ago. It was with this, I think, the Sci-Fi Dimensions podcast, which does lots of interviews with authors. And he did like this half an hour interview, or 45 minute interview, and he spoke about his book, this Little Brother book. He spoke about the book for about 30 seconds, and then he went off in his usual topics, such as, you know, information, freedom, and freedom and politics, and technology and politics, and all this kind of stuff, blah, blah, blah. Which I don't mind, because, you know, it was an interesting conversation, and that's what I quite like about the Sci-Fi Dimensions podcast, is that it's not just about the book. The interviewer often asks about political issues and sort of more philosophical views of the authors, and it's really great. But of course, Cory didn't actually seem to have very much to say about his book or the fiction at all, only the issues that he covered. That was all a bit weird, but then it was nominated for a Hugo, so I thought, well, it must be quite popular. And also the Starship Sofa Sofanauts podcast, they guys talked about it, and they said it was a really good book, one of the most interesting books that they've read recently, although they did, quite a few of the guys said it was the only book they've read recently. So I thought, well, I'll definitely give it a go. And as I said, I picked it up, and it's for free, so why not? So let's just get straight into it then. I'll talk a little more a bit about those issues later on as I get more into the book. The setting of this book is near future San Francisco, and really not a lot has changed in this near future. I'm guessing in maybe like 5 years in the future or something like that. The only thing that's different is there's a slightly higher level of some technology. But like I say, only a few of these things are actually described But quite a lot of them impact the story because it is quite a bit about that. And there's more surveillance as well. You know, they've got more surveillance technology. So things have moved a little bit more towards a surveillance kind of society, but not a whole lot amount more at the beginning of the book. But it's set in San Francisco, and San Francisco seems quite vibrant, as Corey described it. I'd be surprised if he hasn't lived there. And that's pretty much all I can say about the setting, because it's, like I say, it's very near future and not a huge amount of sci-fi elements in there. So getting straight onto the story, our main character is called Marcus. He's like 17 years old. He's a high school kid, and he likes hacking physical things. Like it says at one point that he's making a kite that will do aerial photography, and he's making a pinhole camera with Lego. You know, so he likes hacking physical stuff and also computer security stuff. And he likes playing games, the alternative reality games, which I'm not going to go into because I think I described them a little bit in the Halting State review that I did there. So it's literally a game which is, it's got a physical side, it's got an online side, it's got a sort of game-playing side. I can't really describe it very well. But, you know, you actually do a game in the wider world, but as though you're living in an alternative reality. Some role-playing stuff going on there too. So, anyway, Marcus, with his crew of three friends, they're out playing one of these... they bunk off school, they skip school, and they're out playing one of these alternative reality games. And there's this massive terrorist attack in San Francisco. And, of course, this happens right at the beginning of the book, so I'm not going to give away much in the book by saying that the Bay Bridge is destroyed. And you pretty much you gather that quite a lot of people have died, because it's not just the Bay Bridge that's destroyed. Other things happen as well, which I'm not going to give away. But lots and lots of people die. Thousands of people die. It says it's one of the worst, or it is the single worst terrorist attack on American soil. But what happens is, of course, these guys, these are playing an alternative reality game, so they've got all their high-tech whizzies kind of stuff, and they've bunked off school and things, so they're picked up by the Department of Homeland Security, some kind of military unit there, and they're questioned. And Marcus, because he seems to be like the leader of this gang, this group of four, and he's got it seems like he's got something to hide, so he's questioned a lot more inhumanely and treated really, really badly in prison. And then he's released once they can't actually find anything really to stick on him, and he's released for some reason. Again, I don't want to give too much away, but he's released with orders not to talk about anything. He's not allowed to say where he's been, because he's been in jail for like 4 days after this attack. And of course, when he gets back home, his parents think he's died in this attack somehow, and so he spins a story to actually cover that. But because he holds this whole incident against this Department of Homeland Security, which I'll call just DHS from now on, I guess, in this review, he wants to fight back, but he can't just go to the press because he's signed all these forms and stuff that he's like official secrets. So he decides to fight back in the way that he can, and that is through physical hacking and computer hacking and security and just being more disruptive. So what he wants to do, just to put across the whole sort of thesis of the book, the whole premise of the book, is that he wants to convey to other people whose freedoms are being impeded by the DHS, like, and he wants to convey to them the dangers of restricting freedom in the name of freedom, etc., etc., etc. So, pretty much, like I say, those same themes that Cory Doctorow likes to talk about on his blog and in interviews and things like that. So what Marcus does, he sets up encrypted networks, and he causes stress to... I was going to say he causes stress to the authorities, but pretty much causes stress to everyone, but in doing so causes false negatives or false positives, whichever way we want to talk about it. So everyone's lives is being made a little bit miserable by, because it's sort of like, you know, in this kind of sort of civil disobedience, but kind of uncivil disobedience going on, and it escalates on and on. And I'm not going to go too much on in the book, but I don't want to give very much away after that. But later on in the book, of course, his story does come out, and other things do happen. So the story as itself, it's all right, not that amazing, but it does the job, because, you know, at the end of the day, he wins the day and he gets the girl. Because it's, I forgot to mention this is actually very key to my review here. This is a book that's meant for young adults. It's a what they call a YA book, a young adult, so mainly for teenagers. And so when this character, 17-year-old, it's pretty much written for maybe I'd say 14 to 17, 18-year-olds. That's the kind of, I reckon that's the area that this book is being pitched to. So for that kind of book, it's plenty good enough, because it, like I say, it does the job. But the job isn't just to tell a good story. Of course, the job is to sort of hang on these other factors that Cory Doctorow wants to talk about. I'll talk about that a bit more in a bit, these other issues, when I get into more of the themes of the book. But the book itself and the story did keep me entertained, and I read it all the way through and enjoyed it. It's a very brisk read, even though, the, like I say, the story is quite basic. But two problems with the story. The first of all is, like I mentioned before, this original terrorist attack, this Bay Bridge being blown up. It's a huge event, you know, literally on the scale of the attacks on September the 11th, 2001. And thousands of people die, as I said before. But this, like, it even says in the book that everyone in the city knew someone who died. But the fallout from this event is hardly ever mentioned unless it somehow involves Marcus and his struggles with the Department of Homeland Security in the city. But like everything else, it seemed to be left on the by the wayside, because it's like I said before, it says everyone in the city knew someone who died, but we're never told who Marcus knew who died, or his family who they knew who died, or any of the people he meets. Nobody knew. It's like nobody in the story ever knows anyone who even knew anyone who someone had died. It's just said these people have died. Of course, you know, Marcus's parents thought he died, but then he didn't die. So the kind of the political ramifications of all of this, it seems to be lost, because obviously there is a reason why the Department of Homeland Security is cracking down on the city. There obviously has been some kind of massive terrorist attack, but the reasons for that and the fallout from that, and you know, and who the heroes were on the day, and what the emergency services were doing, or what the economic repercussions would be in. You know, this kind of thing. Like later on, there's a riot. Well, not so much a riot, but a protest happens in town, and of course, there's some police brutality takes place. And they say, oh, they talked about how much damage was caused by that and how much it cost all of that. I'm thinking, wait a second, if the Bay Bridge has been blown up and 4,000 San Franciscans have been killed, I mean, like, you would expect that kind of thing, and who would be worrying about the cost of a protest later when the cost of rebuilding the bridge and rebuilding the economy and the impact they would have there? But all of that seems to be brushed over, and the fact that there actually was a terrorist attack in the first place and what the reasons were behind it, all of that seems to be brushed, like I say, brushed under the carpet. But I think, in a way, that was intentional, because you can't really go into all of that and still have a book which comes in at under like 900 pages. You know, it's obviously written for a younger audience and for the issue, and it's very specific on the issues that it covers. It's not going to cover world terrorists and the whole reasons behind it. It specifically wants to talk about the loss of freedoms that people back in America incur. But it made the initial attack feel a bit detached from the rest of the story, from the rest of the story, and it was just a bit more of a catalyst to set things going. And I thought that really weakened the beginning of the book. Well, not the beginning of the book. Later on in the book, the beginning of the book though is really, really great, because you know there's a chapters with Marcus being held in prison, and there's lots of emotion. It's really strong, lots of drama. And I actually thought, wow, this is really harsh. Where can things go from here? And it turns out that actually throughout the middle of the book, it's a little bit dull in comparison. And even you have to get all the way to the end of the book where like the any kind of threat or any kind of emotion seems to gets that high again, as it does in the opening, say, four or five chapters of the book, which is a bit of a pity. But there you go. Anyway, moving on to the characters. Marcus is a very vague character to begin with, which I think is intentional, because this is a first-person character in a young person's book. And the whole idea of young person's books, or young adult books told in first person, is that you obviously need to identify strongly with a character. That's why a lot of characters, well, I say a lot, it seems to me that quite a lot of characters in young adult books, you don't really, there's not a lot of physical description about themselves, you know, and because you want the young readers to be able to put themselves into the shoes of the character. So what we know about Marcus to begin with is like his age, or his where he is in class, and you know, we get to know his about, you know, later on in the book we get to know his height and we know his skin color, but that's pretty much it. We don't know really anything more about him. We don't know anything about his past. We found out a bit about his parents and things like that, but generally I think this is, even though it's a bit vague, I think that's quite strong, because the whole point is for young readers to go, hey, that could be me. What would I do in that situation? His motivations are sometimes a little bit screwy though, but I put this down to him again being 17 year old. old. But he does convey fleshed out towards the end of the book, and I quite like his more cowardly nature. He's not just a perfect guy, and he doesn't really know what to deal with things, you know, how to deal with things, because he is a bit of an idiot. He is quite a big idiot in many, many parts of the book, but he seems to pull through. I would say he pulls through okay, but of course he doesn't pull through okay all of the time. Anyway, the other characters, again, quite functional. You get the parents, you know, the mother gets it and the father doesn't seem to get it. When you read the book, you'll understand what I mean by that, but there's like an interesting dichotomy there. And you get some cool girls who are like, they're just on the right side of pretty and clever, that they would hang out with the hacker geek but also be sexually appealing to him, which is very important in a young adult book. And you get the cool teacher, and you get another, the opposite teacher as well, the teacher from hell, and you get the best friend and the bully, and you get like the other computer geek, and then the treacherous computer geek. You know, you get all these lots of like opposites. For example, like, go back to the parents, that the father is like all American. It's like, yeah, come on, you DHS, get those people and throw them in prison. That's what we need to do, clear up the streets. And Marcus's mother is from England, so she can be sort of like this outside eye, you know, going, oh, look at these Americans, oh, aren't you barbaric, and things like that. Which, again, it's quite clever what he's done there with the characters, and quite subtle. And on top of that, you get the bad guys as well. The short-haired lady, or the short haircut lady, whatever her name is, and the other agents who are trying to lock down the city. And they are, again, adequately menacing and adequately mysterious to be quite scary. So the characters, all pretty good. There was no character which I thought was really dim. And I normally mention a bit about the love story if there's something that kind of love interest, and here it was pretty good. I can't remember what the book was that I read a while ago where there seemed to be only like the attraction between two people was completely sexual. There was nothing there, and I was like, why do these people even like each other? And thankfully in this book, the relationship wasn't just purely about, hey, these guys, he wants to get into her pants, and she is fine with that. I can't remember what the book that I reviewed, where that was a major complaint, was a while ago. Anyway, moving on. Technology. I made a note here. As I said, this is a science fiction book, but there's very little science, fictional science and fictional technology in the book. The technology that's featured in the book seems to be very much stuff that's available today or is planned to be made in the next few years or something. It's like, okay, if it's not being made now, it'll be out in the next release, if you understand what I mean. Like, they mentioned the Xbox, but it's not just the Xbox 2 or the Xbox 3, or is it the Xbox? It's not an Xbox 2 or Xbox 360, it's the Xbox 3 or something like that, and Microsoft gave all these Xboxes away for free, and then they make the money back on the games. And I'm thinking, yeah, sure, why not? And there's lots of networking stuff, which is, so you could pretty much put it into place now. You know, there's nothing that's laid out in this book which couldn't be done. Which is good. You know, maybe some camera and imaging software, you know, and image analysis software, which might not be quite at the level that's described in the book, but probably not far off that. But there is a lot of technical stuff in the book, but it's all adequately explained. Actually, not adequately explained, very, very, very well explained. And not just the technical side of things, but also like the social and the sort of security kind of implications and ramifications of the technology. And it just comes back to what Cory Doctorow does. You know, he's, like you say, Boing Boing is one of the most popular bloggers, and it's because of people like Cory Doctorow who really know how to write about current technology and make it exciting. So you do get lots of current technology made very exciting. The thing is, I don't think this book will last very long. I mean, not last very long. I think it'll date quite quickly because so much of the technology is very much at sort of present-day levels, sort of late first decade of the, you know, 21st century, that kind of area that we are now. But again, I don't really think this book is meant for the decades. It's very specifically a book for now. It's very specifically a book for this decade or this second half of this decade. And I think that Cory Doctorow would be happy for this book to have a shelf life of maybe 2 years. And then if it doesn't last after that, I can quite understand that, because, well, it just seems like that's the purpose of the book. This book is definitely one with a purpose. Okay, onto the writing style. The English in this book is very, very basic and actually, to be honest, not very good. But it's written for young readers from the point of view of a young person. Which I'm not sure if it's an excuse or a good enough excuse. Maybe it's just that Cory Doctorow isn't actually that good at writing, because it's very clunky. I actually made some notes as I read this book, and because it's an ebook and because Stanza has been updated, I can quickly flick through the bookmarks and find this quite easily. Let me go back here to... Oh, I thought I had the bookmarks right. Okay, here we go. In chapter 3... there's lots of ands. Let me see if I can just find this passage here, because this is a bit of okay. So he's in this situation. He goes, "I nearly fell again, but new hands grabbed me from in front and dragged me down a steel floor, and then forced me onto my knees and locked my hands to something behind me." And I'm thinking, well, actually, how many times do you want to use "and" in the same sentence? And I'm thinking, well, maybe it's not actually that bad. Maybe it's because he's in a very harrowing situation. It's like, and everything seems to be happening at once. So this happened, and that happened, and that happened, and that happened. So I'm thinking, is this a style thing, or is it just not very good writing? Next note that I made here, I just made a note of three things as I was reading through the book. Oh, I skipped the bookmark here. I don't know, I've gone back to the home screen. What do I want to do? Here we go. Second bookmark that I made, chapter 4. Just a turn of, like, really clunky turns of phrase, and these do happen throughout the book. It goes, one of these DHS kind of Department of Homeland Security agent says, "We won't stop at anything in our efforts to bring these perpetrators of these heinous crimes to justice." And I'm thinking, we won't stop at anything. I thought the phrase was, we'll stop at nothing. You know, and it's that kind of thing. There's all these, like, clunkier ways of saying things and more long-winded ways of saying things, which is a bit strange. And talking of long-winded saying, I'll go to the other... Oh, man, I just went back to the home screen on my iPod again. What am I trying to do here? One of the other things that I wanted to say was long sentences. There are quite a lot of long sentences, and when I talk about long sentences, check this one out here, if I can find it. Let me go. So he's talking about going to a party. He says, "I don't really drink much." That's one sentence. He goes, "There's been beer and pot and ecstasy at parties I've been going to since I was 14, but I hated smoking, though I'm quite partial to a hash brownie every now and again. Ecstasy took too long. Who's got a whole weekend to get high and come down? And beer, well, it was all right, but I didn't see what the big deal was." And I'm thinking, wow, there's like 70 or 80 words. Well, maybe not. Maybe 60 or 70 words in that sentence. And it all goes up to the word "was," and "I didn't see what the big deal was." I'm thinking, for such a long sentence, it goes all over the place. Manders all over the place, but then it doesn't... It doesn't lead anything. It just ends on the... And I'm thinking... this happens quite a lot through the book. This is just one longer sentence I picked out. But it does make the prose very clunky and the conversations a bit clunky. Like, we won't stop at anything instead of we'll stop at nothing. And that's written from the point of view. That's what, like, an adult says, not a young person says. So it's a bit strange, really, some of this writing here. And there's lots of passive voice and a bit, like, say, strange phrasing. But it's, let me put it this way, it's not as bad as Crystal Rain. Not by a long, long way. Tobias Espakel could read this book and get a lot out of this book on how to write with, you know, not so passive and not so much was and was and vague verbs and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, moving on. The thing that really pissed me off was all the stuff around the book. Now, I know this is a free book, okay, and I did download it, and I did have a real copy of the book at home, and I'm sure all this stuff wouldn't be in there. But let me just go to the chapter listing here of the book. Again, I went back to the home screen on my iPod. I should know how to work this one. So it goes like this. Title, about, license, introduction, dedication, quotes, about the bookstore dedications, and then we get to chapter one. And then at the end of the book, we've got epilogue, afterwards by Bruce Schneier, afterwards by Andrew Bunny someone, then you get the bibliography, then you got the acknowledgements, and then you got the recommendations. So to actually get into this book, you've got to wade through a whole load of stuff there, and then at the end of the book there's a whole load of stuff as well, and it's all of this sort of like stuff which doesn't, I mean, it has to do with the themes of the book, but it has very little to do with the story in the book. And I mentioned before about the bookstore dedications, and Cory Doctorow writes this: "Every chapter of this file has been dedicated to a different bookstore. In each case, it's a store that I love and a store that helped me discover books that opened my mind, a store that's helped my career along. These stores didn't pay me for anything for this. I haven't even told them about it, but it seems like the right thing to do. After all, I'm hoping that you'll read this ebook and decide to buy the paper book, so it only makes sense to suggest a few places where you can pick it up." The thing is, this doesn't have a place in the book itself, because it literally, you get like, I mean, on the iPod, it's like a page and a half worth of, or 2 pages worth of a story of him talking about his first experience going into a bookshop. And it goes like, I went to Borders, and this, you know, this chapter is dedicated to Borders. You can find them in all major cities. And then you got the address and the phone number, and sometimes, I guess, a web address of the bookshops that you can get them to. But they, like I said, they didn't add anything to the story. They actually made me enjoy the story less. Like I say, it plays into the themes, but it broke up the narrative too much. Especially when it's talking about, oh great, go to bookshops and read books and stuff. But then the characters in the book, they don't read any books. They literally read like one book between all of the characters, maybe 2 books. And the rest of the stuff that they do is on the internet and on blogs and on chat rooms, and they get the school books on their laptops, and you know, they read things on Kindles, well not Kindles, but you know, on book readers and things like that. And they never need to go to a bookshop. So I think it's really weird that like I say, it's actually some of the idea of telling people to go to a bookshop is opposite the themes that are in the book in a way. So going to the bookshop doesn't feed into the themes, because it's got nothing to do with, like I say, all these sort of security and technology and freedom kind of themes that he's talking about as well. And like I say, he could have just had a generic line at the beginning of each book saying, hey, go to a bookshop. But then, of course, because he lists pretty much every single science fiction book in every city in North America, and some in the UK, and Borders, and Waterstones, and Amazon.com, it's like he's recommending bookshops to go and buy the book, but because he recommends all bookshops, he might as well just not bother. He might as well just say, like, go to a bookshop and buy my book, won't you? You know, it doesn't matter where, just, you know, go and buy my book. And to be honest, I probably will go and buy another book of Cory Doctorow, because, you know, I did enjoy this one. So if we'd have just said that, I didn't need it sort of drumming down. Maybe, like I say, I should have just read the paper version. I could have avoided the sales pitches. Okay, on to the themes of the book and a little bit more about the writing style. As I said before, the story has this non-narrative function. What we really have here isn't so much of a novel. It's really a platform for Cory Doctorow to tell the young people about his favourite topics and do his activism. Well, not so much activism, but, you know, talk about his activism and activism that they should be getting involved in. For example, again, I'm not going to go into these themes in depth, because if you want to get into these themes in depth, go read Boing Boing or maybe read this book, I don't know. So, you know, he talks about security and freedom and hacking and technology and open source software, etc., etc., etc. But the book really does read, it's sort of like character does A, and then he picks up B. Wait, let me explain B. And then we get a break from the story for a complete sort of like a mini workshop about, say, data encryption, or about the Xbox free version, or about this. And then it goes, okay, back to the story. C happens, D happens, E, ah, here's how E works, and blah, 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 and F. Oh, and here's a bit about F, blah, 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 blah. And he actually just does, like, he just talks about it, and the explanations of technology. They're not woven into the story at all. There's not even any attempt to weave the explanations of the technology or the ideas or the themes or the bits about the Constitution or anything like that. I mean, they're in the story. The technology itself is woven into the story, you know, and is used in the story. But the explanations about the technology sit apart completely. Like Charles Stross, he would have just given out some funny initials and then just got on with it. You know, he has technology that's tied into the story. But, you know, he doesn't do the whole info dumping thing to quite the extent of, say, Cory Doctorow. And this book has got some of the most extreme sort of, wait a bit, think about what's happened there. I'm just going to explain to you about public and private key encryption. And now we're back to the story again. Oh, that's great, you know, and it carries on like that. But to be honest, I really didn't mind at all, because this is what Cory, as I said before, this is what Cory Doctorow is really, really good at. He likes writing about technology, and he's very good at writing about it. So, to be honest, I don't think I actually learnt that much about the technology or the different themes or the ideas from this book, because, you know, you could pick it up, because I like technology, I like science, and I like keeping up to date with gadgets and things like that. So, you know, I can pretty much keep up with it. But some of the stuff that I learnt in this book, I probably read on Boing Boing itself. So what this book is really is like a series of Boing Boing posts interspersed with some kind of narrative structure told from the point of view of a 17-year-old Californian hacker. And I really, really enjoyed it. about the other themes as well, I don't really agree with a lot of the themes in the book or some of the ideas, but it's mainly because I think Marcus is a bit of an idiot, and I don't really want to go into why the reasons why he is a bit of an idiot, because it'll spoil the story a bit. But I don't think it's a coincidence that Cory Doctorow wrote such a character of Marcus, one who is, he's got like his powerful, like, no, he's not got powerful. His power is his online presence, his blog, and his linking to videos and his linking to other articles. And, you know, he's interested in technology and freedom and things like that. And I'm thinking, wait a second, that's Cory Doctorow. He's writing like a young, cool version of himself, which is a bit weird. And some of the, like, the extremes that people go to and the different things that people do in the book, I don't really agree with them. I'm not sure how much Cory Doctorow agrees with them himself, but they're explored quite well in the book. So overall, I think this book was pretty good. Well, actually, no, to be honest, I think it was really, really good. I read it, like, I tried to read it from the point of view of a young adult. And like I said, the story isn't amazing, the writing is quite weak, but the final product is really, really good fun. And because I rate these books purely on my own enjoyment, I'm going to give this 4 stars out of 5. Because, to be honest, last night I stayed up for many hours just sitting here, flicking through the pages, reading further on until about 4 o'clock in the morning. There's not many books that keep me up until 4 o'clock in the morning. So if you want something fun and you want something light, check out this book. It really is very good. To be honest, I don't think it should win a Hugo, but I've not read any of the other Hugo books, but I don't really care about the Hugo, but to be honest, because, you know, like Harry Potter won and Hominids won by Robert J. Sawyer, which was just the biggest pile of wank, which I keep going on about that. Really don't care about the Hugo as a recommendation of good books. But like I say, if you want something more to chew on, check out some of the other books that I've given 4 stars to, say like Hyperion or something like that, if you want something more to chew on. Or, to be honest, just go and read 1984, because you can really check out the different themes. Well, not the different themes, the exact same themes in this book, but that's got like different technology and a darker ending. Again, I'm not going to give away, I don't think I can give away the end to 1984, because if you don't know the end of the book, or if you don't know the book at all, what are you doing listening to this podcast? Go and read 1984 and then come back again. Anyway, next book that I'm going to read is going to be, actually, I'm not going to try and predict it. It could be anything that I've got on my iPod at the moment. I'll try and get through to the end of The Final Circle of Paradise, but, I don't know. Again, there's only so many days in my life, and sometimes if a book just isn't grabbing me, I'm just not going to get through to the end of it. So I might do something different. Read something different that I've got on my iPod. Just check out goodreads.com to see what I have ready to go, and see what I've got. And I'll probably upload this podcast. Maybe I'll see if I can do it tomorrow, because I'm going to get off the ship tomorrow and have a look around St. Petersburg. But I'm probably not going to be spending time on the internet. I'll maybe do it when I get to Helsinki in 2 days' time. So that's about it. If you've enjoyed this review, if you've got any comments about Cory Doctorow or Boing Boing or Little Brother, if you've read the book and you like my review or want to add something or disagree with my review, send me an email, luke@juggler.net, or check out my website, or the websites, sfbrp.com, if you want to leave some comments on the sfbrp.com wiki. You can add and change that one around or anything like that. Check out goodreads.com/lukeburridge. Check out my blog, which is lukeburge.com/blog, and you can read about my travels and my writing and my other bits and pieces going on there. And I think that's about it. Email me, luke@juggler.net. So now, to finish off, I decided to do something a little bit different, because I got an email from some of the guys over at Starship Sofa, the Starship Sofa podcast, which, if you don't know anything about it, it's a good short fiction sort of magazine kind of podcast. And to be honest, I don't listen to many of the regular episodes. I like listening to sort of like the awards nominated short stories that they have on there, and like the specials that they do, especially the new science fiction kind of discussion panel, you know, podcast that they've got going on there called The Sofanauts. And I'm really enjoying it. I think there's like 4 episodes out now, and it's really good. They have really good discussions, sometimes a bit repetitive discussions, but good discussions about science fiction issues, which I'm really enjoying. I might even be a guest on there in the future. Oh, I've offered to be a guest. We'll see how that goes. Anyway, I got sent a promotion for one of the stories, one of the episodes that they've got, by an author called, let me just quickly go onto iTunes here, I think it's Michael Bishop. Let me just check on my iTunes what the story is called. Yes, Starship Sofa. They put out a promo. They sent me a promo by email about the story that's written by Michael Bishop. Now, Michael Bishop has a story that he wrote after, well, his son was involved in the Virginia Tech shooting a few years ago, and he wrote a story to get over that. And I've not actually listened to the story yet, and I plan to do so over the next few days. But this guy, like I say, it sounds very much like a story written from the heart, and it sounds like he's got a bit of an axe to grind, and I really admire that. So check out that, starshipsofa.com, and actually I'll just play now the promo that I got sent. So here's Tony with his promo.
Hi everyone, this is Tony C. Smith from Starship Sofa Podcast. I just want to give you a little heads up to what's been happening at Starship Sofa this week. We ran a story by science fiction writer Michael Bishop. It's called Vinegar Peace. And it was wrote 2 years ago for Michael's son, Jamie Bishop, who unfortunately died at the Virginia Tech shooting. This story means a lot to Starship Sofa, and I do hope you'll come over and have a listen to it. There's also a little introduction that Michael wrote that I'll get narrated as well. I'd just like to play that now for you.
I wrote Vinegar Peace in August of 2007 because I had to. Our 35-year-old son, Jamie, died on the morning of April 16th, 2007, as one of 32 victims of a disturbed shooter on the campus of Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia. Jamie, an accomplished digital artist who did lovely covers for four or five of my books, was holding forth in room 2007 of Norris Hall in his German class, more than 2 hours after his eventual murderer had already slain two students in a dormitory on another part of campus. The administration failed to issue a warning that might well have saved many lives, in a timely fashion. However, some of its members secured their own offices and notified their own family members of this initial event, and so the worst school shooting in the history of the United States claimed our son, four other faculty members, including a man, Dr. Librescu, who had survived the Holocaust and who held a table against his classroom door until all his own students could escape. Four of Jamie's students and 21 other young people in Norris Hall, not to mention the first two victims in West Ambler Johnston dorm. Another 28 students were wounded by bullets or injured leaping from upper story windows. Some of these young people will live with their injuries the rest of their lives. All of the administrators, with the exception of a woman who later died of a stroke or heart attack, a death that my wife and I can't help but attribute partially to the stress of living with the mistakes of the president and the other policy group members, remain in their position. So much for accountability, and so much for justice. In any case, Vinegar Peace grew from this disaster and from a grief that I can't imagine ever laying totally aside. Jerry and I mourn Jamie's loss every day in some private way, and we think continually of all the other parents and loved ones of the slain and injured who will carry a similar burden with them until they die. We think, too, of the parents and loved ones of the dead and wounded from the United States optional war in Iraq, who long for their dead and who pray for their injured with an intensity not a whit different from our own. How ironic that our son died on American soil. How sad the wasted potential and disfigured lives resulting from violence everywhere. And forgive me the inadequacy of these remarks. Clearly, I wrote a story because I could not address either my outrage or my grief in any other way. Mike Bishop.
Again, can I say, Starship Sova is very honored and so humbled to be allowed to bring this story to a wider audience. You know I speak for the science fiction community when I say our hearts and prayers go out to Mike and Mike's wife, Jerry, and all the families who have to live with this grief every day. You know, I do hope you'll come over to Starship Sofa and take a listen to the story. And there's a poem there as well by Michael for Jamie. It would mean a lot to me and everyone at Starship Sofa. Thank you.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons 4.0 attribution license, which means you can do whatever you want with it. You can even make money from it any way that you wish, as long as you say, who made it? That's Luke Burridge. And where you got it from, which is sfbrp.com. You can do whatever you want with it. And that's it. And as I say, if you make money with it, tell me how you made money with it, and then I'll try and get some of the action going on too. Anyway, just inspired to tell you about the license of this podcast after reviewing a book by Cory Doctorow. See you next time.